Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, welcome, my wonderful audience. As I tell you, whenever I'm alert enough to remember it, it means a lot to me to talk with you guys. Men and women, it just means a great deal to me to have this great connection on this wonderful network. I'm Peter Breggin. The network is Brighteon TV. And you can get all our videos. We moved off of YouTube when they moved us out. And we're on Brighteon.com for our videos. You can also see this show there. If you listen on the radio, by the way, it's probably PRN Live. That's what it's supposed to be. It may be heard somewhere else around the world. It's in the top 1% of the radio shows of this kind. Today, we're going to have an unnamed, wonderful guest. It is going to educate us today. We're going to learn from a very good human being. Well, welcome, folks. You're looking at Sarah Westall. Sarah was frozen when we first got to see her. That is, not frozen, but she was a still portrait, and she was holding her hand up to her head, and she looked like a magnificent version of somebody like Sarah Bernhardt, some great actress with a lot of emotion in her face, and she was frozen. It's a pleasure to have you on this show. You have your own wonderful show, Business Game Changers. And it says here that you have leaders in business, government, science, society. So I'm honored that you had me on way back and helped give our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, a good, healthy start. By the way, we're at 110,000 copies now for this book that's the deepest dive of all into the basis of what's going on in COVID-19. This is a person, well, she's a businesswoman. She has a consultation group. She's a partner in Galax Consulting. Maybe she'll tell us something about that, advertise it a little. But she's got a wide variety of interests and knowledge. It's quite remarkable, actually. I want to talk with her about a very important lawsuit. It's one of the few that's having an impact and looks like it's going through. Thank God we're starting to get one or two or three. Maybe Sarah knows more. So we're going to talk about the lawsuit. And Sarah is also a specialist in banking. She knows a lot about banking. Now, don't turn off the show. Banking is amazing. International banking, and I include the Fed in that, is the most predatory, blood-sucking institutions I know of. It's like from the banks are always owned by wealthy people, these big banks, or other wealthy banks. Most of them are supposed to be doing a service for the people, but they always seem to do the service by enhancing the investment lives of the rich and the powerful, who are then supposed to, when they get around to it, really help the people. And my impression is that even people who use the system and are very defensive, admit that it does more for the banking industry and the companies they serve than for stabilizing the world or giving a hand to third world countries, you know, things like that. So I'm giving Sarah that prejudicial background that I have to see where she wants to plug into it. But welcome to the show. Do you want to add anything to your very smattered here biography?
It's fine. Go to sarahwestell.com and you'll learn all about it. I have articles up there, and it's more of a turning into a whole holistic news site, and which is really great because it allows us to cover so much of what's going on. And I write articles and I post articles. So I posted one of yours just recently about the
Matthias Desmet.
Yes. About that, and there's so much in it. You know, you're talking about the finance industry, the banking industry, and it might be boring, but it's really important. It's not boring at the big picture level.
No, it isn't.
Because now you're talking about strategy and geopolitical stuff, and you're talking about intrigue and murder, and you know, it's as political and complicated, and it pretty much wields the power in the world, and they know it. They talk about it. They know they do, and they talk about it.
Well, I think that's all true. What did you think about my brief introduction about how it's like all these powerful elite institutions, it gets fatter and more powerful, and the rest of the world is sucked dry of wealth and power?
Well, we always used to laugh that the largest buildings with the most money were the banking buildings. Right, the investment institutions, and well, there's a reason for that. You know, they're making good money. People used to, well, not used to, they still are. When you take a company public, the institution that takes them public gets such a huge percentage of the money that they're raised. It really takes away from the health of this company that's starting, and it's not a warranted percentage. So there's a lot of issues that are built in, but they have so much power, so much money that companies feel they have to do that in order to, you know, go to that next level. So those are just, you know, basic things that everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people can see. But the central bankers have been talking about the Great Reset, bringing in digital currency for years. You know, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where they have their central bankers' annual meetings. They've been talking about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now. You know, Harley Schlinger and I talked about it, and then I started doing a lot more articles once he made me aware of how serious this is. But it's really tied into the Green New Deal and carbon credits. People think that, you know, yeah, we don't want pollution. We want a healthy environment. We want things to be nice. We don't want animals to be killed. We don't want, you know, piles of trash in our oceans. There's a legitimate issue here, but they're using carbon, which is plant food. And if there's too much carbon in the city, there's issues, but you plant and you figure it out. But they're using carbon as a mechanism to control all manufacturing and to control industry at every level in countries.
Yes.
They were talking about that. And they're also using They're openly talking about wanting to define the budgets of governments, of countries, and go around governments and control the, I mean, can you imagine somebody controlling your household money for you? Who's, I mean, you would feel like a child. You would be a child. And that's what they're talking about doing at every country level, going around the countries.
That's right. Yeah, it's my impression too. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so there's that's a big deal. I mean, this is very serious. This whole globalist thing that's going on is very serious, is very far along, and we're right at the doorstep of them bringing in the digital currency. Israel just instituted cash being illegal for over $1,700.
That's oh my gosh, it's happened then. I didn't know
in
that.
In Israel, yes. They started it 2018. They passed some legislation, but they refined it and it went into law this past Monday. And basically, people will be fined 25%. There's two tiers, 20 and 25%, I think, whether you're a business or individual, of every transaction you make over your 1,700, or if you're an individual, you can do 4,200, I think. They will fine you 25% of that transaction every time you do it. So people aren't going to do it. And then there's the problem with what happens with the people that don't have bank accounts. And it gives you way too much power over. There's so many problems with that. It gives you so much. And their logic and what gets a person who doesn't think about the deeper ramifications of this repercussions is that they tell you it's to track criminals. But as you know, after you wrote that book, criminals, government is the biggest
criminal
supporter. Yeah, they're the biggest criminal or the biggest supporter of criminal networks. I've been covering human trafficking for a long time, and the sad reality is government is supportive and behind it and props it up. Ukraine has been used as a money laundering market for babies and human trafficking for a long time. An industry to be multi-billion, many billions, one of the biggest dark market industries in the world, that including organ trafficking, you have governments heavily involved in that. And those are the same people that want to track absolutely everything I do. And I've watched whistleblowers who are the best people in the world trying to protect little kids, get their bank account shut down, get thrown into prison, just everything they can do to destroy their lives because they're trying to save little children. And that's by government. And so this is why it's so serious that the government does not have control of every bit of our lives. It's just so basic. We saw it with COVID. People hopefully are starting to learn their lessons of what we're talking about here.
Well, what you're saying is incredibly important. My wife Ginger's been working with, you probably know her, Catherine Austin Fitz. Do you know Catherine?
Yeah. Yep.
And talking with her about this whole issue of don't let them outlaw cash. Start using cash more and more so that it'll hurt them more and more if they outlaw it, get people used to using it more. Because what they want to do is go outlaw cash and go to the digital, and then they have complete control over everything. Ginger just wrote actually an article, a column, our weekly column she did on cash, and one on cash and one on the digital stuff. And the whole idea is that if they can go digital, then they get complete control over your life. They can delete your account. Boy, that's really being deleted if they deplete or embargo your finances. They started to do that in Canada to the extent they could against people who just supported the truckers, not even the truckers. They can tell you what you can buy and what you can't buy. And they can, you know, give you country, you know, make you use weaker and weaker currency, which the governments use, cause inflation, helps them gain more power. They just keep spending and spending and inflating your digital currency even more easily. So, yeah, these are really, really serious problems. And I think that everybody needs to know about the banking industry because they cannot be trusted. Including our Fed.
Well, and they're including the Fed. The Fed is not owned by the American people. It's owned by very wealthy people, mostly based out of the city of London and elsewhere. Some American, you know, some families that have some presence here, but it originated from, you know, wealthy people out of the city of London. And it's hard to wrap your head around it, but it's true. And it just, you know, truth a lot of times sounds like conspiracy, but it's true. You know, I mean, it is what it is.
Wealthy people and, with power conspire, and people without power conspire.
That's absolutely
any
right.
Ordinary family, there's people conspiring against other people, and sometimes with deadly seriousness. And any business you try to build, there are going to be people conspiring to take it away from you or to cozy up to you. Human beings work together toward deeds that are evil or illegal commonly, and that's all conspiracy is. It doesn't even require secrecy. The conspiracy laws, by the way, think about how funny it is that the globalists and the extreme progressives, they don't want us thinking that there are conspiracies. Then why do we have conspiracy laws? We have criminal
That's right.
conspiracy laws.
It's, well, what, you don't think people get together and plan?
Yeah.
It's like, come on. All they're doing is getting together and planning. But, you know, Ukraine is the center of a lot of their trafficking, money laundering, whatever. The Ukrainian Treasury. I interviewed a whistleblower out of that ran, well, was doing the PR work and stuff for a Latvia banking system. This is a big banking system. And his banking system was used to launder the entire Ukraine's treasury. Back in 2014, they wiped that thing out to about $50. And I mean, the amount, and he was trying to get the banking system, the central bankers, the CBRD, I believe, that regulates and makes sure that there isn't issues. And the United Nations, they just covered it up. They wouldn't work with them. The story is absolutely amazing. And I did a lot of vetting of his information. It all vets out all the people he was working with, people tied to the Clintons and tied to these different groups. And
it's amazing.
It was amazing. And don't you care that they stole the entire treasury? Don't you care that Putin did, his group did a lot of money laundering through there. So it's just, don't you care? No, they're behind this. This is why. Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of shows with whistleblowers over the year that have exposed the banking system and how much, you know, back in the day, right after 2008, the crash, things that were going on then, the amount of trafficking and drugs and black money that goes through these banking systems are more than anybody realizes. And how they use the island nations to be able to get out of their tax, you know, their tax obligations mm-hmm. and things. So taxes are for you and me, not for them. And that's just the way that it is. The best thing for us to do is to take back our banking so that all that money doesn't go to them. And we do some banking locally. And these resources stay with as close to the people. We would have so much money, so much resources, if it wasn't being continually funneled away from us. People have no idea.
Yeah, that's very much what Catherine has, Fitz has been talking about. You know, put your money in a local bank, a community bank. Keep a lot of cash at home or some other place so that you have that in case of emergencies. You know, buy from local stores, local farms, make a relationship with a local farmer. I mean, it is an idea that one can work at and that's workable. But it is work. And similarly, just using your credit cards less and less, so that they have less and less power over us, and so that they're more and more dependent on the cash economy, so that they'll be afraid to cancel it, hopefully.
Yeah, they're right. You're right. And I don't think they'll have... I think we're winning the hearts and the minds of the people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if there's enough people with the courage that we need yet for them just to go in and change stuff and not care. We need more people willing to stand up and have the courage. And I think we have the hearts and the minds of the people. I really do. I think that has changed. But I'm just not sure yet if how much they can push us and we still won't fight back.
Yes. And I think we have to fight back with such large protests, peaceful protests, that they can't do January 6 all over again because there'll be millions and millions of people lining up and millions of people protesting. And if they keep locking us up in jail, then there'll be millions of people who stop working or stop the buses
yes.
or stop the planes and the trains peacefully.
That's right.
But I really want to get out in the open how much they frightened us with the way they've abused everybody at January 6th and how they made up it was an insurrection when it was actually an invitation. I've seen videos, partly yep. in some of my legal work, of how people were literally ushered into the building by police. There were different activities going on in different places. And the police were by far and away the most deadly and abusive people there. Far
well, yeah,
away.
Well,
and I'm, yeah. I'm pro-police.
So am I, and but yet they're still used as, they're useful idiots like so many others in this system that don't understand how they're a tool. They would not be working for the most, you know, the 0.0001% of the people who are behind the most evil, corrupt things that you probably never have seen. Most people have no idea how bad this is. We're also a very spoiled country in a lot of ways. These other countries are a lot more like Russia. It's much harder to do a red revolution on Russians, or to, because there isn't as much trust in government, although we're learning very quickly not to trust the government here. But they're able to get away with psyops to scare people or to make things up out of the blue, whereas in other countries they can't do it anymore because they did it for too long. They're like that. They don't even listen to them anymore. But here, they got away with it because the people were too naive and too trusting. And that night, being naive and being trusting needs to go away as fast as possible, because we need to have a healthy skepticism about government and about what's about there. Anybody with power over you, you have to have, you know, you have to beware of their power over you and watch it very carefully, right?
Oh God, yes. And you know, it seems like the most naive among us are the most trained, the most educated, the most successful, because I think that there's been a process been going on for decades where instead of a meritocracy where the people are the smartest at the top, it's the people at the top are the least critically intelligent. They've suppressed their ability to look critically at themselves, at other people, at the society in a meaningful way. I don't mean in a communist way, but in a meaningful way. And they're just stupid about the importance of democracy, constitutional democracy, and human freedom.
All I agree these, with you 100%.
The globalists just never, never talk about human freedom in the terms of individual freedom, personal freedom, Bill of Rights, because globalism depends, as you started out saying, it depends on running roughshod over the nations. That means over the people. And the banks are a big central part to globalism. We've only got a minute left to this segment. You're going to talk about a lawsuit. Do you want to give a little quick teaser on it in 50 seconds? It's really interesting.
This is a group of us that were kicked off YouTube back in October 15th, 2020. We had more, collectively, we had more views than any major network. And they kicked us off right before the election, but I think it was also right before COVID. And there's a lot to this. And we're leading the country in our lawsuits, so it's looking very promising.
Good. I want to hear a lot about that. We need promising. I think that the legal arena is getting more promising, folks. And I think I know that our movement is getting stronger and stronger. And it's going to be an interesting few months. And November elections are really going to matter. We're back with Sarah Westall. It's interesting talking to her during the breaks, folks, as it is on the air. Sarah, where do you want to pick up with the things we've been talking about, either during break or the lawsuit? Or
Well, maybe we can talk about the lawsuit and then we can roll into, you know, the parallels to Nazi Germany to today. And I think people will get a lot out of that as well. But this lawsuit is so important. And I don't think people realize that censorship is the backbone to, you know, the first thing that a country does when they go and take over and, you know, when they control or take over another country is they shut down their media and take over their media. It's very important that they control the media space because the hearts and minds of the people and the control structure, they have to be able to control those messages. And a totalitarian tyrant controls them absolutely. And that's what they're trying to do. And so when we got shut down off of YouTube, you know, it was a shock to, I mean, some of us had been on there for 10 years without a single warning or complaint, and then suddenly we're the worst thing in the world, right? It was weird. I happened to have 10 different videos with doctors because it was after COVID started. So I was interviewing doctors and different people, and if they were too prominent or there was too much there, they took down my videos. They all at once, they took all these videos down with doctors and different, you know, or not just medical doctors, but also scientists and people with high levels of training in different fields that mattered towards COVID. And then right before the election, they took us down. And like I said, we were a force to reckon with because we had more viewership than Fox News, than CNN, than, I mean, any of these players. And they took us all down at once, right before the election. But
And if they weren't just making up votes and packing boxes, which they also did, you can never say the election wasn't completely manipulated when the voice of the president and everybody who supported him was taken down from all of the social media in a very short period of time at the critical election period. That means it was an invalid election right then and there. And that's just a part of the control of, you know, covering up the media, covering up, you know, the president's son and all the breaking news about him before the election and so on, Hunter Biden. So I'm going to be agreeing with you just about everything. And I think you give good emphases. I don't talk enough about what you just said. It does begin with censoring, folks.
It really
doesn't
does
begin with shooting people in the streets. It begins with censoring them, information they get.
Yes, it does, because they're trying to control the people's minds. They're trying to control their thinking so that they can control everything that they do. And that's the most important. And we're messing that up. And they didn't just take the small channels down. I mean, they took all of us who had more viewers. I had 130,000 subscribers on YouTube, and that was after being held down and
that's right,
already censored. Yeah, I mean, my subscription level was held at 130,000 for a good year. So they were already messing with me. But hindsight being 2020, we have a much better idea of what's going on. You know, COVID started unfolding quite a bit too, and all the tyranny around that. And we were also talking about that. We were also willing to talk about the truth in any arena. They didn't want us out there talking about the truth. And I think it had just as much to do with the election as it had to do with COVID and questioning the authority in general. And we weren't going to be, you know, that was when they were saying that authoritative voices, they're trying to prop up with their, they didn't want us questioning the narrative.
Yeah.
And now that there's two other lawsuits that are going through, Rumble has one, and then there's two state attorney generals that have one, and they're doing a discovery. And in their discovery, we have been able to see a lot more stuff is starting to come through. And, you know, that the CDC and the, you know, the government was arranging meetings and conferences with the media companies, telling them what to censor and not to censor. And they were openly doing this. You know, they say we suggested, but they were saying these are the things we want you to censor. And then that's all coming out. These are all in these emails. But we also have, you know, there's three points to our lawsuit. There is Section 230. There is the government acting as a state actor. That means the government is using the social media companies to censor. And they're, you know, and so then when they do that, then the social media company is also at fault. It's like telling somebody to shoot somebody and forcing them to shoot them. Are they, mm-hmm. did they really shoot them? You know? And then the third thing, which doesn't have to do with the general people, has to do with us, is the breach of contract, because, you know, that there's more detail behind that. But Section 230 is, you know, they say you can't, we can't get rid of this. And it's really not. Section 230 is a big deal, because as you start looking at it, they use Section 230 to give these companies market dominance. YouTube and Google, you know, we're suing Google, which is the owner of YouTube, has 92% of the worldwide search engine market, because YouTube is really a search engine to find content. And this is just data that I got from statistics this past year. But now think about it, even beyond that, most browsers, even DuckDuckGo, and this is what people need to look into. I believe that they're using the Google search engine as their engine. And if they're doing that, how much do they really have? And so we need to do discovery. This is on a side note, not to do with our lawsuit, but there should really be discovery on how much of this market they have. Do they have almost 100% of this market? That is scary. And now, not only is it in our country, it's worldwide. I mean, in some markets, just not even thinking about that alternative browser, in some markets, they have a complete 100% domination, you know, in some countries, of what people get to search on and see. This is a big deal, because they have complete control of that society on every single, on every level, on mental level. And okay, so that is Section 230, the fact that they were able to build these companies up to dominance, but then they can use them as a tool for censorship. And that was in the AG's lawsuit. And I'm like, this is great, the way they worded that. Mm-hmm. But we did that too. We talked about how they used it over and over and over for market dominance. But the other part is the state actor. And the state actor is very significant, because you can't coerce or motivate someone to censor. Nancy Pelosi, being the most powerful woman ever in our government, telling them that Section 230 is a gift, and that if you don't censor more, we can take this gift away from you.
Yeah, remind people what Section 230 is.
Section 230 is giving these companies immunity of what was put on their platform. And immunity to take things down. They can pretty much do anything they want with their content and not be sued.
Do you imagine the payoffs they gave the congressman to get that?
Yeah, how it's being used as a tool for complete domination. It cannot be understated. And, you know, that coupled with the banking and controlling the food, I mean, it's really quite remarkable what they've done. But this lawsuit, we're ahead of everyone. We started in October, or right away, maybe it was like the beginning of November, we actually filed. And then in Silicon Valley, the judge there, if you're suing Google in their backyard, those judges, it was like the judge was one of their lawyers. It was so painful to watch. This judge, it was like she was working for Google. Nobody has ever beat Google in their backyard. I mean, this doesn't, maybe the tide is turning now, but no one has. Now, at the district level, the Court of Appeals is where we're at, the second phase, and we have a hearing set for October, so it's coming up. And just to get, this is what Tom Rentz told me, he goes, this is great news, sir, just to get a hearing is a big hurdle to get mm-hmm. over. Like, oh, good, so we've already passed that hurdle. But our case is so strong. We are still raising some money to fund it. We don't have it completely funded. So if you really have the heart, please help fund us, because this is really about everybody. It's not, I mean, we're not gonna get anything out of it. Maybe, could we get our YouTube channel back? And do we want our YouTube's channels back? Do we really want that? I don't even know. Cause it's just, it's like suicide to be supporting.
So you have to have when you bring a cause of action, you have to have in mind what you expect, compensation, right? So you're asking for money, you're asking to get back on YouTube, asking to change their policies?
The thing was to eliminate the censorship and give us our channels back. and that they can't operate in this fashion. And then if it goes to the Supreme Court, which if we win, you know, our lawyers are telling us if we win, we'll go to the Supreme Court for sure, because they'll bring it to the Supreme Court. If we lose, then we're going to petition to go to the Supreme Court. But getting at the Supreme Court, they're going to be looking at the legal aspects of this in the sense of, is 230 constitutional? Is it, is what they're doing, being a state actor, using Section 230, is this constitutional? You know, is it a breach of our rights in the Constitution? That's a big deal, because then that opens up the, it starts, it breaks down this whole censorship charade. Right.
Well, once it becomes a monopoly, it has to be interfering with freedom of speech. I mean, one could, in a pluralistic industry, what they could argue, you know, there are other alternatives. But once they have these virtual monopolies, then when they control speech, they're impairing freedom of speech in the society. I hope the judges see the obvious.
But even, I mean, there's case law, even if they don't have a monopoly, but the government is coercing or motivating them to censor, that is a violation of our constitutional rights. They can't, that's the First Amendment. Government cannot censor free speech, period. Our speech cannot be, even if we're wrong, I can be 100% wrong all the time, and unless I'm harming somebody, you know, like shooting, yelling fire in a theater or whatever, they cannot censor me, period. Right. And that's for scientific debate. The fact that they were censoring scientific debate is unconstitutional.
It's amazing.
They can't do that. Yeah. And so it's, the question is, are our judges going to step up and do what's right? Or are they going to be controlled and blackmailed to the point where they do blatant, you know, blatant bad decisions? So we'll see. Do they have the courage? Do the judges have the courage to do what's right? Now, Trump did place three more judges in, you know, the circuit court. So there's out of, you're going to get, we get three. So there's a chance for us to win at this level. And because it's, there's better judges here. So we'll see. I mean, it's, we have such a strong case. People could go to Give, Send, Go. givesendgo.com/defendingfreespeech and donate to our cause. They can also see all the different, I have four of the court, the case documents up there, so they can read them themselves. And but if you have a heart, please give some money if you can. I know it's a very tough time, but we're trying to raise a little bit more money. So I have to give that plug in there during your show.
That's fine. I think it's a very good thing to give to folks. I'm glad you're mentioning it. We have to fight back, and money is one of the tools we have to fight back.
It's what we have. And, you know, I got to tell, let's bridge this into Nazi Germany, because propaganda during Nazi Germany was their one of their main tools. They knew it. If you keep saying a lie big enough and you say it over and over, people will believe it because they can't fathom that you would possibly lie about something like this. I mean, that to me is COVID, you know, because I remember I sent you when the CDC fixed those numbers, and my article was kind of like, I can't believe they're lying. I'm not even sure. Could they possibly be lying about this? And because at that time, it was hard for me to mentally get over the fact that I just caught them lying and fixing all these numbers. That's what they were doing. And so, but back then, it was a technocracy. They were beginning as a fascist technocracy. They were in bed with corporations, and they were taking over control of everything. And they were getting the young ones, the children, to rat on their parents. They were teaching the children a different sense of history and obligations than what was part of their history. And that's what's going on now in our public school systems. You know, people go into these public schools and they come out like totally different. Then they go to college and these kids come back completely different animal than what they started. And these parents are horrified. And that's the same thing that's going on here. But, you know, they talked about, you know, the Stasi during East Germany, they tried to control everything. They wanted information on everybody. And if they would have had the kind of information they have on people now, that's what they wanted. But so it's incredible. But if you read the Nuremberg trials, there's such parallels to what's going on right now. I posted one of the Nuremberg testimonies, and I also just posted, what is her name? She's just great. She talked about the definition of evil and comparing it to how they were able to get people to do these things.
Oh, you're talking about Hannah Arendt.
Yes, it was beautiful. And comparing.
She's got serious problems in many ways, though. I don't know whether we don't really have time to get into that, but she was to some extent a self-hating Jew. She hated Israel. She was her consort or her husband was a Nazi for many years, and she's Jewish. Desmond, whom I've been very critical of, you mentioned you had that up on my website. He relies on her very heavily because she actually made statements that the people were as much responsible for what happened in Nazi Germany, or more so than the leaders. That these terrible things come out of the people themselves, and she's got a lot of bizarre stuff along with some of her good stuff.
Well, the reason why I liked it is because I have somebody that's working really hard at me to understand, and I agree with her, the free will. Everybody has free will, and that our free will to make a decision to follow these people is what allows these people to get away with mass genocide and murder. And yes, they play games on you where you almost don't have, a lot of these people don't even know they're doing what they're doing. And so how can they be at fault with that? But there is something to be said.
I think it's a huge mistake, that emphasis. I deeply believe in free will. But when the option is, if you speak back to them, they may torture you for 12 days. You've heard about that. It's been passed around. Or they may shoot your relatives. They don't play fair. So in one
it's
of the things,
difficult.
Like,
yes.
if you were to go up maybe you got 30 people in your bunks and the Nazis come in and maybe you decide you'll go and you stand up to them, they're not just going to drag you away and torture you. They may torture the entire compound.
Yeah, that's
so different. I really think that it's the wrong road to take. These villains have enormous power over human beings, and we have to focus on our free will, but not everybody in a culture or sufficient numbers are going to necessarily stand up to somebody like a Hitler when it happens. In fact, probably no culture ever has. We got to knock these people off, not kill them, stop them in their tracks. And
that's right. Well, I'm telling a psychologist who has studied this very much and knows this person more than I do. I just thought that one little story that I published.
I understand. Well, Desmet does the same thing. Desmet also, he says, he talks about how everybody's suffering, and then people have to stand, take care of themselves. But that's not the message in COVID-19. Isn't that we have to be nicer people and get along better? That's what he's trying to tell us to do. And and in fact, he's responded to my criticism. This is a newsflash. Desmond has responded to my criticism in my three-part piece with Ginger helping America Out Loud. Malcolm runs it, America Out Loud. And his response, first of all, was in Dutch to me. The book is in English. And in his response, he basically says, why can't we all get along?
Wow.
Well, I think he's a plant in there to subvert our fighting spirit.
Well, that's the thing of the free will. We have more power than we realize. And mm-hmm. and this is what I've said to people who are in really difficult situations. You might not be in a position to quit. I was speaking this for a long time. You might not be in a position to quit. You might not be in a position to be able to stand up, but you sure can be in a position to be a cog that messes something up at the right time. And they don't need to know that you're in there. And we need people in the system messing things up. So they can be our allies if they know they are aware of what's going on. And so we have free will. We have a lot of power, and
yes.
We just have to be able to use it.
Yeah. Yes.
And that was the message that I... Yeah.
We got to identify that we have enemies. And Hannah Arendt was unwilling to do that. That's probably why she was an anti-Semitic Jew and why she consorted with Nazis and was against Israel and the trial. Also the trial. She was against the
trial. She was against Nuremberg? Well, that's too bad.
No,
I didn't know.
Oh, Nuremberg, yes. But also
I thought the story was the actual article. The actual article is fantastic. Somebody else wrote
about
something
they should say. I don't want to. But I'm on this subject right now because a lot of the people in our movement, some of the very smartest and best, have been seduced by let's all get along when the guy who's asking us to get along with him is actually an enemy. He is saying do not look for elites. They either don't exist or you don't can't hurt them. That's another thing he wrote in the response to me. We can't get anywhere by hurting the elites. And so these people take away the power from you by telling you you're not supposed to identify who your enemy is. And we do have to identify. But
well,
this is
clearly
not your argument.
My argument isn't even close to that. We have to have a laser-focused target on who we're going after. And then we need to unite and not let them divide us because we have the same enemy. And if we can't unite over this, we can't unite over anything.
That's
the left-right paradigm, that's BS. We need to be fighting because these people are out to kill us. I mean, it's like, come on, guys. They're out to...
Well, they are killing us in much larger numbers than anybody realizes with the vaccines, so-called vaccines, and mistreatment of COVID. And now they're going to try to lead us to starvation for a while.
Right. And food is the number one weapon of
folks,
war.
Folks, join the movement. Join the Oh, my God. It's over. Reclaim America. Join the movement. God bless Sarah Westall. You're doing great work. Thank you, my wonderful audience.